This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Wait, wasn't Lewis Comfort last week's episode?
Yeah. I wasn't paying attention, obviously.
That is true.
Hey there. Welcome to season 11 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season, we were inspired by the number 11, which is, as you know by now, a pair of ones. So this season's theme is pairs, duos. We are talking about ladies who were a part of a professional pair in some fashion.
As always, we are not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find, you know, as friends having a fun conversation. So if you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right. So on today's episode, we will talk about Gertrude Morrow, one of the architects for the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm Lizzie Rahr, pumped that the Olympics are starting this week. I'm getting ready to watch gymnastics in San Francisco, and I'm joined by my fellow co-hosts, Jessica and Nurjiti.
I'm Nurjiti Rivas, wondering if I will actually catch the Olympics this time in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Jessica Rogers. Also excited about the Olympics. Gymnastics is fun to watch, but I also like the races and the swimming, just all of it. And I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
Yeah. All right. So today we're heading to the Bay.
Let's go.
Okay. Let's do it for the Bay. That's the song. Okay. Sweetie. Sorry. That's it.
Nice. All right. Gertrude Elizabeth Comfort was born on February 13, 1888, in San Francisco, California. Her parents were Elizabeth and John Comfort. Her dad was a Pacific Mail steamship executive.
I bet business was booming for the Comfort family.
Well, from what I read, they lived in San Francisco, Oakland, and Alameda. I'm assuming that means that they were moving around, but I guess they could also have had more houses? It's unclear, but Gertrude attended Alameda High School in Alameda in the East Bay.
Okay, basically they were in California.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, in the Bay Area specifically. In 1909, Gertrude enrolled at UC Berkeley to study architecture. Now, if you remember from our episode with Julia Morgan, when she was at Berkeley from 1890 to 1894, there was no architecture program.
Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah, I was wondering where she would fit in the timeline of the school. So that's cool.
Yeah. So the School of Architecture was started by John Galen Howard in 1903. So the program was still pretty new, and Gertrude was a part of the first few classes of architecture students.
Breaking ground.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. While she was at Cal, she was very involved in extracurriculars. She was part of the Architectural Association on campus and a member of the Gamma Phi Beta sorority. She was also part of the Women's Mandolin and Guitar Club. I'm not sure which of those she played, or maybe both, but she was getting her music on. And she was the president of the Saturday Night Club, which put on dances for students. And she did this with another architecture student, Grace Y. Weeks.
How this lady is doing architecture school and all of this. President of the Saturday Night Club? This sounds like a time-consuming party club.
I think that the Saturday Night Club sounds super fun. But how did she manage everything? I have no idea. It also just makes me wonder how studio culture must have been for her to be able to do all of the social stuff plus architecture.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but Gertrude was also a great artist, and she put her skills to good use as part of the art committee for the Blue and Gold Yearbook of 1912. She also designed a poster for the performance of The Awakening of Every Maid by the Parthenia, which is a women's singing group on campus in 1913. I'll have a picture of that in the show notes.
She's all over the place in a really good way.
Lizzie, if you mention one more extracurricular, my goodness.
Well, she also designed the coat of arms for the Gamma Phi Beta sorority. Heraldry alert, y'all.
Shout out to our Greek life listeners.
OMG, stop. I cannot. What didn't she do? I'm also glad that we are bringing back heraldry.
Right? We can't forget.
Never.
Okay. So, Gertrude is obviously a very active college student doing her thing, and she still manages to graduate with honors from the architecture program in 1913. She then stayed at Cal for another year in 1914 to receive her master's in architecture degree. She was the second woman to receive a master's in architecture from Cal.
Dang! That's such an achievement! Way to be a pioneer, Gertrude!
The way that she did all of these curriculars and still graduated with honors is beyond me. And I'm just impressed that she managed to get these degrees with little to no pushback, unlike some of our ladies during that time.
Yeah, it seems like Cal was sort of like, yeah, come, any gender, we'll take you.
Yeah, love it.
After school, Gertrude got a job working for Henry Gutterson, who had an office in San Francisco. She spent a couple years working for him and also working to get her license.
Yes, 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 get your license on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In September of 1916, Gertrude got her license and opened up her own architecture firm in downtown San Francisco. She was the seventh woman to receive a California license.
Celebrate good times, come on.
Wow, only 2 years after graduating and she gets all of this. This is great.
Right. There was an announcement printed in Architect and Engineer, a popular magazine in the area. In 1917, she was also mentioned in an article as an architect practicing in the city and was one of only three women listed. Julia Morgan and Grace Jewett were the other two.
I hope they were friends.
Right?
I'm glad Gertrude is getting noticed and celebrated for her achievements.
Yeah, that's pretty cool that they're getting recognized. Also, bah, 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 future episode alert and bah, 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 past episode alert.
Well, now she's shaking and baking and getting her commissions, right? Meanwhile, World War I is happening. Her old boss, Henry Gutterson, gets called to war camp service. At this time, he was the supervising architect for the St. Francis Wood neighborhood in SF. And since he was leaving, he asked Gertrude to take over as supervising architect for him.
Whoa. I feel like for that time period, that was almost unheard of. For a woman to be asked to lead the project? Shout out to this Henry guy who sounds like he knew how to recognize talent when he saw it.
Well, our episode 72 lady, Marion Manley, did something similar. Maybe for World War II, I believe it was.
But even then, I don't think it was for such a high role like this one.
Yeah. Okay, so St. Francis Wood was a new neighborhood in SF, established in 1912. It is one of 8 master-planned residence parks in SF. The neighborhood was part of the City Beautiful movement and has curving streets, standalone houses, and decorative monuments. The street layout of the neighborhood was done by the Olmsted brothers, Frederick's kids, and it was supposed to feel like you lived in a park.
I hear a buck coming.
Well, it sounds lovely. And also, if it's Olmsted, you know it's nice.
So originally, it was an upper-middle-class neighborhood with easy streetcar access to get downtown. It's in the southern part of the city, but definitely a ways from downtown unless you drive or take the train. Today, I would say it's a fancy neighborhood because it's a neighborhood with actual standalone houses that have yards. It's about 5 or 10 minutes from my house.
OMG, you have to go on an arc venture then. Take pictures, post it on our socials. Experience Gertrude's master plan development.
Also, peep that the fancy neighborhood is the neighborhood that has yards.
Yes.
Yards, gardens.
Anyway, Gertrude took the job and ended up getting a bunch of commissions for houses out of it. In 1918, she was hired to design a house for Mr. and Mrs. Robert C. Mason. Robert was one of the developers of the neighborhood. The house at 70 Santa Monica Way is a Dutch colonial-style house that, after Gertrude designed it, became popular in the neighborhood. The house is still there today.
You gotta go, Lizzie. Can you go? Say you can go.
OMG, we gotta go.
I can go. Look at it from the outside, you know?
Yes, of course. Drive by.
Yeah. She designed about 10 houses in St. Francis Wood over the years and one in Forest Hills, which is another planned neighborhood, which is even closer to my house.
That's so cool. I love that this was such a springboard for great work.
Yeah. She just gets house after house after house after house.
Mm-hmm. In 1918, Gertrude got an interesting commission from Lila Havens. Lila was the widow of a real estate developer and had a 50-acre property in Oakland that she wanted to develop into a community colony for women thinkers who, with their minds or hearts or hands, are accomplishing the world's work.
The world's work. Wow. That has to be the largest undertaking I've heard of today.
Oh, gosh. That sounds like such an amazing opportunity and initiative.
Yeah. Sadly, the project was never built because it turned out Lila's husband had more debts than she realized.
Oh, dang. Well, that ended quickly.
I know.
What a colossal bummer. Are there images? Can we see what a space to accomplish the world's work even looks like?
I don't know how far, like, the design process got, so I'm not sure. But I just felt like I liked the idea that she would have designed this women's space to change the world. In 1920, Gertrude married Irving Morrow, a fellow architect. Irving was also a Cal grad and had gone on to study at the École des Beaux-Arts as well. He had his own firm called Morrow & Guerin with his partner William Guerin.
A love match made in alumni heaven.
Yes. In 1922, Gertrude gave birth to a little girl, and for a few years, there weren't any records of many projects for her since she was focused on her daughter.
That's fair. Parental leave is allowed, though. I hope that's not the end of her career. I would think not, since we're like at 14 minutes in this episode.
Yes, I would hope that there is more. But if not, I wouldn't be surprised either, since having kids has and is still to this day, it can be a turning point in many women's careers.
True. Okay. Then in 1925, Irving and Gertrude opened the firm Morrow & Morrow. Irving had dissolved his firm with William, and the Morrows started doing their own thing together. As we've mentioned before with couples and the naming of firms, this made it seem like it could be maybe a father-son partnership or brothers and probably made it easier for Gertrude to get projects. Although she was getting some work on her own before.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we mentioned it maybe in our charrette with Kate Regev. Most definitely when we talked about duos in previous seasons. The deception. But hey, it worked.
Yes. Kate mentioned the Morrows in her article in regards to the naming.
Mm-hmm.
Gertrude and Irving designed many smaller residential projects over the next few years. In 1930, the painter Maynard Dixon recommended Mara and Mara for the architectural design of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Shut up.
What?
Yep. So, the iconic Golden Gate Bridge. Obviously, we would think of it more as an engineering work. So you might ask, what is an architect doing on this project?
Honestly, at the beginning, I thought you had a typo and we would be discussing an engineer.
But that's interesting.
So in this case, the architect is definitely a consulting role to the engineer, right? The engineer is more of the lead. Charles Alton Ellis was the engineer on this project. And the architectural contribution was in the Art Deco geometric detailing and the styling of the bridge's towers. They also designed the toll plaza, the railings, the walkways, the lighting, and they're also the ones who picked the bridge's iconic international orange color.
Okay, that's not nothing. An architect does a heck of a lot more than I ever realized in bridge design. Obviously, not all bridges will need this level of architectural involvement, but an icon has architect written all over it.
Yeah, I still think it's pretty great. I mean, they designed all the other accoutrements. And hello, the color is iconic.
Yes, and there was a big argument, too, over the color and what, you know, like, the Navy wanted to paint it like yellow and black striped or gray or something. There's stories about like what it could have been painted.
Oh.
So anyway, this project is often solely credited to Irving because the contract was in his name.
Mm.
However, letters to the board of directors of the Golden Gate Bridge and Highway District from Irving use we, us, our.
Mm.
And also in Gertrude's obituary, her daughter is quoted saying, "I am sure that she had her hand in it."
Hells yeah.
Yeah. So again, it's not a surefire thing, but like if you look through the work of Mara and Mara throughout time, it was hard to tell who the main architect was on many of the projects. Some drawings were initialed by Irving, but then Gertrude would sign an axonometric drawing for the same project. So it appears that they worked very closely on most of their projects, and it was hard to tell who was doing what.
Like a great duo.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. The Golden Gate Bridge project went from 1930 to 1937. And the bridge opened on May 27, 1937.
Hip, hip, hooray!
Yeah!
Did they bring, like, a chicken or a rooster or an eagle? Like, what was that bird that they used to commemorate the Brooklyn Bridge? But maybe that was just, like, an East Coast thing.
They did not have her carry a rooster across the bridge for the opening, like Sad. Emily did.
Maybe a bucket of chicken, like a bucket of fried chicken.
Now I get to drive across it for my commute, so... Thanks to Gertrude.
Beautiful.
And Irving.
That's so cool.
During these years, the Morrows kept working on various projects in the Bay Area. One house was for the parents of a well-known composer, Henry Cowell. Irving was really into music and attended many of Henry's concerts, and so that's how they got the commission for this house.
See, you never know where your next project is going to come from.
Mm-hmm. True. Very neat.
Okay, guys, this house is really cool. It's the most modern house that I have found that Gertrude and Irving worked on. And it still exists today and actually recently got sold. So there were several articles written about it. I'll have links to them in the show notes because the pictures are really nice. And it's also noted as the first modern house in San Francisco.
Ooh, I really like this house. Listeners, you gotta check out our show notes. I like the use of materials and the accent colors throughout. Oh, very nice.
Yeah. The accent color is kind of similar to the international orange. And so I also like that. It feels kind of like it's like a nod to the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Sadly, the articles don't mention Gertrude as they should. But in the archive of their work, there are drawings signed by Gertrude for this house, including a great axonometric drawing. It was designated a historic landmark by San Francisco Planning in 2016. And the report mentions both Gertrude and Irving.
I'm glad that finally Gertrude got the credit she deserved.
Yes, I'm glad she's getting the credit, and I'm also glad that she signed her drawings. Ocular proof that she did the work.
Yes. Gertrude and Irving also designed non-residential projects such as the Alameda Contra Costa Building for the 1939 Golden Gate International Exposition on Treasure Island and the rehabilitation of the rectory and guesthouse of the Mission San Juan Bautista.
Mm-hmm. Diversifying.
Yes. Also different.
Gertrude also assisted Theodor Vischer in his design of the music building at Monrovian Seminary and College in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Gertrude's godmother, Emma Thursby, was a singer, and the building was built in her memory.
Oh, how nice!
Yeah.
So special.
Gertrude also helped alter the Gamma Phi Beta sorority house on Berkeley's campus, and in 1939, she entered the Ladies' Home Journal's Small House Competition. She didn't win, but her design was highly praised.
She's building up such a nice portfolio of work.
Mm-hmm.
In 1942, Morrow and Morrow moved out of their San Francisco office and started working out of their home in Oakland. This was during World War II, and Gertrude got some projects with the Navy during the war designing new building types.
Ooh, fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Joining the war effort.
Mm-hmm.
After the war, it seems like their workload really fell off. They don't have many projects listed during this time, and very few with Gertrude listed. Irving was able to collaborate with other architects on a few projects, but even those weren't very many.
Sad. I wonder if there was an underlying issue, or perhaps it's because the men were coming back from the war and they weren't giving work to women. But there was the construction boom. Ugh, so many questions. I have so many questions.
Yeah, it's hard to know. But in 1952, Irving died suddenly from a heart attack. After that, Gertrude closed their firm and retired at 64 years old.
Oh, how sad that she lost her husband. I hope that she was able to enjoy a nice retirement.
Oh, I see now. That is sad. And I hope she retired. But Lizzie is about to tell us something different, I think.
Okay, no, but Gertrude actually retired, y'all. Like, she took a trip to Hawaii in 1955. She took up watercolor, started ballroom dancing. She even went on to win awards in ballroom dance.
What the what? That's great. Retirement goals, y'all.
Right?
Yes. I want to retire like that, yo. Some painting, some dancing, somewhere by the beach. I love this.
Mm-hmm. She also kept up with various clubs like her sorority, Gamma Phi Beta, the Cal Alumni Association, the Ebel Society, and the Women's Athletic Club of Oakland.
Living that true retirement life. She was keeping herself busy, but wasn't like working, just having a good old time.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Yes. In 1966, she moved to Tucson, Arizona to be near her daughter. She lived there until she died on October 10, 1983, at 95 years old.
Mm. Whoa, what a long life. I'm so glad that she was able to be close to family in the end.
Yes, agreed. She lived a long life and a full life. She did so much.
Yeah. In 1992, her daughter donated all of Irving and Gertrude's work to the Environmental Design Archives at Berkeley, and you can find all of their work there today.
Oh, this is great. Documentation of such a lifetime of work in one place to study and learn from it. I'm so happy to know people can keep learning from Gertrude for years to come.
Hear, hear. I wish this was more common for the rest of our ladies, but here we are.
All right. We've now reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drum roll, please. Anne Fougeron.
Yay!
Yay, yay, yay.
So Anne is actually a listener-suggested caryatid. My boss, Rich, went to grad school with Anne and recommended her as a caryatid.
How awesome!
Okay, listener suggestion. So Lizzie, is Rich the one that I met?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, that's great.
Mm-hmm. So Anne is French. She grew up between Europe and the U.S. She went to undergrad at Wellesley College in Massachusetts to study art history, but took some architecture courses at MIT while she was there, which sparked her interest in architecture. She then went to UC Berkeley for a master's in architecture, which is where she met my boss. And a few years after school, she opened up her own firm, Fougeron Architecture, in San Francisco.
Yeah, get your business on, Anne.
Excellent, excellent. All great schools, and we love to see an entrepreneur. Great.
So Anne's firm does a variety of residential projects, both single-family and multifamily. She has a real heart for designing low-income housing in particular. And her firm also does a lot of work with Planned Parenthood clinics. And from what I've read, her projects tend to focus on natural light and how that interacts with the space, and exploring new building materials and clever uses of structure in a project that can become ornamental. So combining structural and architectural elements into the design.
Oh, kind of like the bridge and the architecture. Oh, hey, oh, hey.
Mm-hmm.
Anne is being a boss in San Francisco, just like Gertrude. Keep doing important work, Carrieton.
Her work sounds so impactful and so well needed at this time. I can't wait to look her up.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Carrieton, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye!
Bye!
Adios!
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.